It's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does on a Monday, and great to have you with us. A lot to do over the next 60 minutes. I tell you, Mondays needs to be like 2 or 3 hours during the NFL season. Jason Cole will drop by, NFL Hall of Pro Football Hall of Fame selector and author, get his thoughts on... Well, we'll talk about the Chiefs-Falcons game, which we'll get to here in a second with Sam as well. Bill Bender will drop by, college football insider over at the Sporting News. He covers the NFL, too. We'll get some thoughts with him on that. Something to consider, not today. We've got Bill for something to consider. Odds and ends with Caitlin Clark and the Fever in game one of that series against the Connecticut Sun to talk about as well. And here is Sam Yarnell, ladies and gentlemen. Week 3 in the NFL, just about a wrap. We got a couple games on Monday night, which we'll get to in segment 2 on the show. But Sam, you know, the Chiefs just keep plodding along. And, you know, another win last night. They are not playing their best football. I don't think they'd I think they would admit that. I think anybody watching can see that. They played without Pacheco last night. And even were able to somehow manage to hold on for a victory when they got some calls that didn't go their way late in the fourth quarter of that game in Atlanta.
So this is seeming to be a very prevalent opinion within the sports media space on this Monday, but I think Jason Page can attest to the fact that I was on it very early on. I texted him about it yesterday during the late afternoon slate of games, or maybe in the first quarter of Sunday Night Football. Coaching is so important in the NFL, and this season as a whole through 3 weeks has been a full display of nothing but that. I mean, last night in the Chiefs-Falcons game, it was a microcosm of Steve Spagnuolo's decades-long genius defensively, where he's just proven to have teams baffled left and right. Two clutch fourth-quarter stops to hold the Falcons to 3 fourth-quarter points while the offense didn't do anything really in that fourth quarter. And their credit to the Falcons' defense, they had that Patrick Mahomes unit stifled. Their last, I want to say, 3 drives, they really couldn't do very much. Steve Spagnuolo is one of the great defensive coordinators of all time. And last night, his clinic put on against Kirk Cousins and the Falcons offense, which is riddled with, as Jason has told us since the beginning of the season and even before, riddled with weapons. There is so much prowess within that Falcons offense, and they were completely shut down by a genius coaching job by Steve Spagnuolo.
Can I tell you, I'll give you a couple of contrasts. That first drive of the game, you see the Falcons march down the field and score. And Steve Spagnuolo and that defense were immediately able to make the adjustments to take away, you know, Kirk Cousins, the bootleg, and they were on it, and they were able to make adjustments and get guys in the right positions to make plays. Can I give you the difference? Denver yesterday goes into Tampa Bay, does whatever it wants, and you can't tell me that the Buccaneers don't have the defensive players, the skilled players at positions defensively, to do a little better than they did. Bo Nix was able to march that team down the field almost any time he wanted yesterday. They were getting everything they wanted. They were able to run the football. Nix was able to. Bo Nix looked like a world beater yesterday, and we all know he's not yet. He may turn out to be. And there's the difference. Todd Bowles, that Buccaneers team, not able to make adjustments. And on the other hand, you watched the Chiefs in that game immediately make an adjustment in terms of what Atlanta was trying to do in that game. So I agree with you. Coaching is, I mean, and we can go through countless examples of where coaching was a big deal yesterday. You know, the Eagles win in spite or despite the fact that Nick Sirianni is doing everything he can right now to try and lose games for them from a coaching perspective. You know, and the list goes on and on. And I mean, you've got Dallas yesterday who loses a game and basically doesn't show up for the first three quarters. Then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, these guys look inspired. They look enthused to actually be playing a football game. Boy, if they lose, I don't think they're going to lose to the Giants on Thursday. But if Dallas loses in New Jersey to the Giants on Thursday, we could be talking about five-alarm fire in Dallas as far as that team goes. Just want to say.
Panic button fully on the table after the first quarter of that game yesterday against the Ravens. I mean, 100%, and it is getting smashed if it's not a touchdown lead at halftime. I wanted to go back to something you said, though, about that Broncos-Buccaneers game, because it draws comparison to another game and another theme we saw yesterday in the NFL, Jason. Dave Canales is so valuable with a veteran journeyman quarterback. He might not know how to do it with the youngster and the first overall pick, but hey, if you give that guy a couple of weapons in an offense and a journeyman veteran quarterback, it really speaks to a lot of success. We saw it with Baker Mayfield and a little bit of fall off in that game yesterday against the Broncos, not having Canales. But now in Carolina, how about the Panthers and the Red Rifle throwing the ball Amazing. Around the yard, putting up 300 plus yards and three touchdowns? The first quarterback first QB to this do year. That in the league this year? Oh my gosh, who had that on their bingo card? No. To the Eagles Saints game, though. Rock fight. And who had this game being a rock fight? To your point about the Sirianni and the coaching, specifically in that game, that comes down to the final play, the Dallas Goedert play, where he runs the slant route, crosses the field, and then runs up the sideline. Hurts hit him in the middle of the field. I think it was a gain of 60 yards. On that play, the Saints were running press man coverage. No team in the league in that situation is running press man coverage. It made no sense to me, and they didn't switch when Goddard crossed the field. So the Saints, poorly coached in that situation, lost the game because of that drive, largely because of that play. Jason, coaching in the NFL, it's more valuable right now than I think we've seen it, at least in the time that I've been watching football in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and look, you had two or three plays, really, in that Eagles game yesterday that were the deciding factor when you look at the three big plays offensively that Philadelphia had, or two or three plays that they had in that game that really decided the game. And again, they get a win. They're 2-1. I don't know who in their right mind feels good about anybody in the NFC East right now with the way that division is. Look, I got a question I want to ask Sam on the other side that I'm going to pose to him, that I have not told him I am going to pose to him. We've got that coming up. Jason Cole will join us in about 20 minutes as well. Don't go anywhere. All right, Pro Football Hall of Fame selector Jason Cole, longtime NFL writer, author, will join us in 10 minutes. Bill Bender coming up later on in the program to break down the weekend in college football as well. Busy Monday show. All right, Sam. So here's the question. Is there anybody in the NFC outside of the Vikings right now that you would consider a threat to win the Super Bowl after week three? Because outside of the Vikings, the Vikings are the real deal now. That loss by the Giants in week one that we all went nuts about, you know, the Giants could be 2-1 right now if not for a kicker in week two. So the Giants all of a sudden don't look nearly as bad as they did after week one. I take that because the Vikings are obviously much better than any of us thought. They are the big surprise through the first 3 weeks of this NFL season. Maybe sans Pittsburgh, who's also 3-0, but doing it in a much different way. This Vikings team is very well-rounded. I know the Texans didn't have Joe Mixon yesterday, and that obviously had an impact on that game. But when we're talking about, you know, where this Minnesota team is, outside of them in the NFC, is there anybody that you look at right now and say, oh, yeah, that looks like a Super Bowl team? Because I don't see one.
There are three that come to mind.
All right.
And weirdly enough, None of them are the only other NFC undefeated team in the Seattle Seahawks. The first one, and again, we're just going off of this season. We're just going off the first 3 weeks.
Sure.
The first one is the San Francisco 49ers, obviously. Mm. Why? Because even though they had nobody in that game yesterday, they still held pat with the Los Angeles Rams.
Who also had nobody.
Also had nobody, as I was going to say, but have a Hall of Fame quarterback at the helm. Let's not forget, San Francisco's still going to get the best running back in the league back. Hasn't played this year. They also didn't have their best pass catcher and their second best pass catcher for part of the game. If they're going to keep relying on Juwan Jennings to score three touchdowns and he's going to keep proving that he can do it, yeah, San Francisco could easily win the Super Bowl, especially with the way that that defense plays. I know yesterday, again, not the best, but at the end of the day, this is a defense that has looked really good when healthy this year. So you can't assume injuries, as Jason always reminds me.
True.
So I'm not going to. And I'll say that the
but
San
Francisco
49ers.
But you don't have to assume injuries. But hold on a second. You don't have to assume injuries with San Francisco. The injuries are happening. I mean, it's happening before our very eyes. You had Trent Williams going down yesterday. There are legitimate concerns here. Deebo Samuel, obviously, Christian McCaffrey. I mean, the Niners have always been built on the premise of the sum of the parts. Well, there's a lot of parts that are sort of missing here. And I like Jordan Mason. I like what he's been able to do running the football. He ain't Christian McCaffrey. He does not strike the fear in opponents of Christian McCaffrey. Maybe by the end of the year, that's a different story. But I'm not there. And look, you know me with San Francisco. I've always thought they were a Super Bowl contender. Through the first 3 weeks right now, not feeling it on San Francisco.
My other one is the Detroit Lions. This is a Detroit Lions team that could easily be 3-0 outside of a week one fluke, and they've bounced back in the last 2 weeks and beat a couple of really good teams in some resounding ways. So I'm buying in on the Lions. I think that they're back in a big way. That running game is still very much there. I know they had some funny moments yesterday, but on the whole, they were very, very good. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a top five receiver in the league. You look at how many home game or how many indoor games that team has to play this year. They're gonna make the playoffs and they're gonna be a high seed, and the Super Bowl's indoors this year. So yeah, the Lions could win the Super Bowl. And the last one, Jason, this may be the most obvious recency bias of them all. I think the Atlanta Falcons could win the Super Bowl.
Oh God, no.
And I'm saying that to a guy who preseason liked the Falcons a lot.
Yes, listen, I do. To win the division, win a playoff game, not win a Super Bowl.
The way that they played against the Chiefs, who are the two-time reigning defending world champions, last night, they proved that they can hang there with the really good teams in the league. And that's something that a lot of teams who, if you think about before the season, we would talk about as contenders to win the Super Bowl. I'm looking at you, Miami Dolphins, couldn't do. When we look at the Atlanta Falcons, they are able to hang with good teams, and they're just like a step or two away, which I definitely think you could see them taking that step over the course of the remaining 15 weeks of the season.
Is Pittsburgh so good defensively? Are they that good defensively that if they just get enough offensively, I'm starting to actually wonder if they can win a Super Bowl this way. Good defensively?
No.
Because we've seen teams with prolific defenses. I'm looking at you, Baltimore Ravens, with Trent Dilfer at quarterback. We've seen teams with prolific defenses be able to ride that to a Super Bowl. I'm just asking the question, is that enough with Justin Fields and or Russell Wilson to win a Super Bowl? I think the answer is maybe. Not saying that yes, but
maybe. That was a completely different atmosphere of football when that kind of thing happened. Sure, when the running back was the second most important offensive position, defense was a way that you could win Super Bowls without having a prolific offense. But in today's day and age of football, Jason, there's no way that you're going to win a Super Bowl playing the way the Pittsburgh Steelers do. They are exactly this. They are what the Cleveland Browns were last year. They can always get in the wild card. There will always be a final wild card, a second to last wild card spot for them. Sure, they'll have a very swift exit in the first round. Maybe they make it to the championship game and then get lit up, but it's not a conference championship game, not a Super Bowl, obviously. But it's not a sustainable style of football that will actually win you championships until you get a prolific offense. We saw this with the Steelers when they won the Super Bowl, Jason, but what did they have on offense? They had Ben Roethlisberger, a future Hall of Famer.
Would you call Kansas City last year a prolific offense?
Yes.
No. They have. Come on, that wasn't a prolific offense last year.
Any offense with the greatest quarterback of the
generation.
It was
not a prolific offense last year. It was a good offense. It was not prolific. It was not prolific. That team won on the backs of that defense.
Sure, but if you're going to compare Kansas City's offense last year to what the Steelers are dealing with,
I'm just saying it's a maybe.
That's different universes.
I'm just saying it's a maybe for me. I'm not saying it's a yes. No, Jason Cole's coming back. We keep the conversation moving on the NFL. Let's talk with Jason Cole, Hall of Fame selector, author. He's covered the NFL for 7,430 years. Close? Off by a year?
Just one.
he joins us on the show. Let's start with the Sunday night game because I'm curious to get your take. You know, it isn't pretty every week, and we have to stop expecting that it needs to be or will be when it comes to this this Chiefs team. But man, oh man. They just keep finding ways to win games.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're really, really good. I mean, they're the champions, so there's a reason for this.
Can they keep winning really this deep. Way, though? Can they keep winning this way?
The Chiefs inevitably every season have a lull during their season that goes on for sometimes somewhere between 3 and 5 weeks where they lose – you know, 3 to 4 games and everybody thinks, oh, they're done. And because they have the best quarterback and the steadiest hand and the deepest team in the AFC, they're able to right the ship fairly quickly and get back on track and be a championship caliber team. But they have a sort of annoying ability to play down to the level of their opponents. And tonight was an example. Tonight was an example of them not taking that team, you know, particularly seriously. Mahomes had a couple of, you know, the interception by Simmons. And I know Simmons has 6 interceptions against him, but that's a sloppy throw. And then he had a sloppy throw, like the one to Rashi Rice, where it was behind him and almost got picked by Bates. That's another one where, like, that ball's got to be on the front shoulder, not on the back shoulder, and you know that. So right now, Mahomes, I think he doesn't feel a challenge until it's necessary, and then he'll get it sharp for a little while. And this is sort of how the whole season played out for them. But by the end of the season, they're going to be in the playoffs, and they're going to be right there, and they're going to be the favorite to make the Super Bowl.
Is there an argument to be made that they're probably going to wind up with the best overall record? If they stay healthy, not lose anybody else other than Pacheco, I mean, they've got some wins that they're going to stack up in that division alone. They've already gotten through the first 3 weeks where you could argue, you know, that was going to be sort of the tougher stretch of their schedule. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they came out with the number one overall seed.
Yeah, Buffalo's going to be up there with a lot of wins. I mean, they're an overwhelming bet to be one of the top three, but they weren't last year, and they still won the Super Bowl, right? So I'm not sure that it really much matters to them. I think what matters to them is Are they sharp at the end of the season? I had this discussion with a team president actually this earlier this week, where I think that there's a real, I don't know how you quantify this, but there is a real move by coaches now that they've gone to 17 games and now that the preseason is so meaningless to really, you know, take the season in chunks. Make sure you don't get hurt. Make sure that you're peaking at the right time. And don't panic just because you lose a game or you're not playing your best football in the first month. Don't overreact to situations. You know, basically you're pacing your team. Because 17 weeks, as much as it only sounds like it's one more week on top of 16, it really has changed the mentality of the game and how you approach it.
What do you think of Atlanta on that fourth down play, deciding to run it instead of throw it when you went out and spent all this money on Kirk Cousins? And where are you on the Falcons through 3 weeks? Everybody was kind of high on them, thinking maybe they're starting to turn that early corner with the win in Philadelphia. Could have been as much about the way Philadelphia sort of handled that game, but we'll give Atlanta the benefit of the doubt. I mean, where are you on the Falcons right now, three games in?
I don't have a problem with running on that. I mean, because Bijan Robinson's great. So you're putting him in the hands of one of your best playmakers. I don't have a problem with that. I would like to see him get his shoulders squared to the line so that he's not dancing outside so much. But that's a different thing. I don't like the execution of the play. I don't have a real problem with the play call itself. Where I have a real problem with that is on the fourth and five from the six, you know, on the previous possession. Like you take the field goal. It's a five. It's at that point a 5-point game. You make it a 2-point game. You've only given up 22 points. You've only given up a couple of scores to the Chiefs. You know, keep playing the game out, because then when you don't have your two offensive line, your two of your five starting offensive linemen, you're not playing really that great. All you have to do is get in range for the field goal to try and win it. If you hold them, or you're back in the same situation where you got to get the touchdown again the next time, but you haven't forced yourself to be in that situation to have to get a touchdown. Like, you can live on your defense a little bit. So the decision not to go for the field goal on the previous possession really annoyed me a lot more than the decision to run the play call that they did.
I got 2 minutes left in the segment. Talk to me about the Cowboys, because I look, through three quarters of that game, they looked listless. They did not look like they were into that game. You know, we could say that some of that is Baltimore. It can't be all Baltimore. You cannot lay an egg for three quarters the way they did and then show up in the fourth and we're supposed to feel good about you when the last 2 weeks they've looked terrible.
Well, I don't feel good about them at all based on this. I mean, I thought that they played terrible defense. You know, they're just, you're, as you say, uninspired, but they're not a very physical team to begin with. They're a speed oriented team and they've got to play maximum speed, and they weren't playing maximum speed in this game. So that's one problem. I thought this was going to be a problem matchup for them coming into the week. I'm not surprised by the result. I am surprised that it became close, but I really think that some of that is based on Baltimore. Like, I don't get Baltimore on the 3rd and 3 with about 8 minutes left in the game and throwing. Like, you've got Derrick Henry going for 150. You've run for how many yards? You have Lamar Jackson, you know, put the, and you want to just run clock at that point in time. So even if you don't get it, you know, run, keep the clock moving or force them to use a timeout earlier, put the pressure on Dallas. I hated that play call, and it allowed them to get back into the game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Hanging out with Jason Cole, does a great job. Hall of Fame selector, a very famous football player, somebody associated with perfection, passed away on Sunday. We'll talk about that coming up in a couple minutes. I also want to get his thoughts on the Raiders. Man, Andy Dalton lighting up the world. I know.
And Antonio Pierce
had some strong words about his team afterwards. We'll get to it next. Sports Wrap continues on this Monday.
I'd like to say this is the first time, but there have been others.
How many?
Who can keep track?
You think this is a joke? Darlin, we need answers, and you're gonna give them to us.
Tell us again.
My car broke down. I brought it here. I got stuck paying an expensive repair bill.
So it's true.
How much, Darlin?
$2,300.
$2,300?
Well, what was I supposed to do? My transmission was shot.
You pick up your phone and you call CarShield before the car breaks down.
Plans through CarShield cover up to 5,000 parts and systems in your car.
That's right. A plan through CarShield could save you on some criminally high auto repairs, especially if your car is out of warranty. So call CarShield, America's number one auto protection company, before a breakdown and save yourself from getting stuck in car repair jail.
Let me guess. You hate saving money.
Who hates saving money?
Apparently you do.
All you had to do was call CarShield. And you could have protected yourself against expensive repairs.
Yeah, and then my price will go up the minute I file a claim.
Shut up! CarShield has the price locked in.
For as long as you cover your car.
I guess I should have called CarShield?
It's about time you said something that made sense.
Now you know what you need to do next time.
Bet he'll call CarShield now.
So can I go? Or
CarShield has an A rating with the Better Business Bureau and was voted America's most trusted auto protection company. Don't get handcuffed paying expensive auto repairs. Call now and get the CarShield guarantee. Your price will never go up and your coverage will never go down as long as you cover your car. In just minutes, you could have a plan that covers up to 5,000 parts and systems in your car. Don't wait until it's too late. Get CarShield's best coverage yet. Call 800-722-6574.
Sports Wrap continues. It's good to have you with us on this Monday edition of the show. Jason Cole is hanging out with us. Looked like he was pondering the meaning of life as we were coming back.
Yes.
I think the Raiders got to be pondering something. Look, Carolina looked so bad through 2 weeks. I thought Andy Dalton would give him a little jolt. The guy could still play. He made some good throws in this game for a guy that's 14 years in the league and just kind of sitting on the bench.
Well, a guy who's going to be, probably, if he wants to, in the league in year 17, 18, 19. Because you need to have guys who are backup quarterbacks who know how to play, right? So he's going to have a job making $3 to $5 million a year for a long time. And God bless him if he can do it, right?
This is about the Raiders, though, isn't it?
Well, it's about two things. Number one, it is an indictment of Bryce Young and his lack of willingness to attack downfield. And it says a lot about how ineffective he was. And he needed to watch this game and he needed to learn a lot from Andy Dalton about how do you actually play in this league. That's number one. Number two, it is a lot about the Raiders who, that's Atlanta, a huge egg in this game after, such a great performance against the Ravens the previous week, where you thought, okay, there's something to build on. And then they come right back and they lose to what is literally the worst team in the league. What's going to end up, it's just a tragic mess in Carolina that's to be sorted out by Dave Tepper. But as far as the Raiders go, what's your preparation like? I know Antonio Pierce is threatening people's jobs after this game, and saying, some guys were cashing it in and, making business decisions. And they got to make business decisions as well. But why didn't you put the fear of God in those guys before this game? Why did you why does it have to happen afterwards? I mean, I don't blame him for saying it, but I have more questions about why they weren't prepared.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same position because, you know, the Bloom shouldn't be off that rose so soon. Those guys played like their hair was on fire last year for him, and already 3 weeks in, this is kind of the effort that you get. I mean, maybe they're feeling themselves after the win against the Ravens. Is that some of it?
It could have been. Like, you have too big a victory and you don't know how to handle it. You're a young team. You think you've arrived somehow and you didn't. You try and slough off the opening game against the Chargers as not being an indication of what you really are. That game was a better reflection of where they are rather than the Ravens game, which was poorly executed by the Ravens. You know, you took advantage of some of their misplays in that game more than you were really that great. So, yeah, I mean, I just think that I don't know that this team has the proper mindset to attack an entire season. They may have the mindset to attack in a given week, but there is an approach to a given season. And that's part of the maturation of the coach. And then we're talking about Antonio Pierce again.
Nick Sirianni, is this a case of, I don't want to attack the guy personally, but is it a case of him just feeling like he's the smartest guy in the room? Because sometimes the way I watch him coach games, I get the sense that that's just sort of his personality, and it feels like it leaks into his coaching when it comes to some of his decisions.
Yeah, I mean, decisions at the end of the first half are, you know, highly questionable it's a subtle way of putting it. I didn't have a real problem with going in on the fourth and four in the second and third quarter of that game, trying to get things going. But you're right in that Sirianni thinks an awful lot of himself. There's no question about that. And that rubs guys the wrong way. And when you're that guy who acts that way and then you make decisions that backfire on you, it makes people lose confidence in you faster. Because they wanted to see, you know, they are already fed up with you in the way that you act.
Yeah.
And then you come in and you act this way. And it's like, well, dude, how do you act like you're the smartest guy in the world? And then you make bad decisions like this. Yeah. So that's a natural human instinct. It's happening with Sirianni.
Before I let you go, Mercury Morris passed away. Always the face of perfection when it came to this Dolphins team. Every time somebody would lose and they'd have a perfect season, it'd be Mercury Morris. It'd be like the first one you see toasting. I interviewed him more than a couple of times in my life. I'm sure you came across him as somebody that's sort of affiliated with the Hall of Fame. Give me a thought on Mercury Morris and something people should know.
Mercury was really fun. I mean, he really was kind of a life of the party. On a team that, for the most part, is really, the characters on that team are deadly dull. I mean, Zonka is kind of an interesting dude because of his toughness and, you know, his tenacity. But, like, if you know those guys, like the Dick Andersons of the world or Bob Greasy and, you know, the offensive linemen, like, they were just so vanilla. And the way that they played was so vanilla and so, I guess, taciturn, which is a really weird word to associate with a football team, right? But they were perfection, and they were super boring. They were just and Mercury was one of the guys, God bless him, who was not boring. He was not boring in any way, shape, or form. He was the life of the party, and he had no problem kind of sticking it to people when they lost. When they lost games, and he could maintain his platform of being undefeated.
Well said. Jason Cole, Hall of Fame selector. We got down to like, I don't know, 600 early.
7,000 guys who are eligible. Somebody was like, sorry. This guy's not there. Most of the guys aren't good enough. Like, there's about eight or ten guys on the list that came out of like first year. I don't know.
Jason, always appreciate it, my friend.
Likewise.
We're coming back. We roll. roll into segment five on this Monday edition of the show. Odds and Ends wraps it up in about 10 minutes. Got to let Sam give some picks for the Monday Night Football doubleheader. We'll tell you how we did in Page versus the Prince as well. But first, we say hello to our friend Bill Bender, who does a terrific job with the sporting news on all things football, college, and NFL. But for the purposes of this conversation, which is an abbreviated one today, we only have Bill for one segment. Let's talk some college football. What on earth happened to Kansas State in that game the other day, Bill? Obviously, give me some thoughts here on this Wildcats team in this game against BYU that we saw this weekend.
Well, 18 to 22 year old kids happened.
Oh, you know, come
they
on,
were up 6-0, and no, I say it from this end that they have a fumble not go their way. And then they throw an interception, and all of a sudden, bang, bang, two touchdowns on the road at BYU. Tough place to play, became a lot tougher. And it was a little bit the breaks didn't go their way, and a little bit of that was kind of the theme of the weekend. Rather, you were at Utah going into Oklahoma State. That was the difference. Utah handled going in on the road. USC didn't. Tennessee handled going in on the road. That was a tough game for them, regardless of Oklahoma's quarterback problems. But for Kansas State, it just, for everything I was raving about them last week, it blew up in their face. And now they face I don't want to call it an elimination game, but a very high urgency game against Oklahoma State this week.
Bill, tell me, you mentioned the Oklahoma-Utah game. What did Utah do to shut down Ollie Gordon so successfully? And did it affect it, do you think, Ollie Gordon's draft stock at all?
They just haven't run the ball well all year. They've been around 100 yards per game all year, and they've had a hard time getting Ollie Gordon on track. He had some good tough runs in there, but Utah's the most physical team in the Big 12. BYU's a very physical team. Will not surprise me if Utah and BYU at this point play in the Big 12 championship game,
wow,
which, boy, that would be a fun one. And, you know, for me, the Oklahoma State, it's that physicality factor. When you throw as much as they do, I mean, you allow that the defense to tee off on you a little bit, and they've just struggled to get that running game going. They abandoned it a little bit as well against Utah on Saturday.
In the Big Ten, do you have concern around Ohio State? This is twice now we've seen them through the first like half of a game struggle with like some of the worst that college football has to offer, Akron, Marshall. Is there any concern around Ohio State?
I want to see Jason's face when I say 18 to 22 year olds again that know that they're playing against a team that they're going to beat by four touchdowns no matter what. Why I'm not as concerned about Ohio State, I would say it in one stat. Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins are averaging 9 yards per carry between the two of them. So when you have that kind of domineering running game, that they're basically doing what Michigan did the last couple years with Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards. And previously with Hassan Haskins, we can get to Michigan and Khalil Mullings. He's the same guy. But Ohio State has two of them. I think they have been sitting on this one, where they go up to Michigan State this weekend and totally dominate the Spartans in the Big Ten opener.
You mentioned Michigan. What does it say to you that, you know, amidst all this retooling and sort of chaos that's sort of ensued around them early on in the season, that they were able to still figure out a way to get that win on Saturday?
I mean, they can't throw the ball. It's like watching Iowa. This is, if you're a Michigan fan, this is what watching Iowa is. You know, the stats are remarkably the same, honestly, the way that they were able to run the ball. They're going to be in every game because of their defense. Their defense will keep them in every game this season. They're going to lose a couple more. They may lose one that they previously didn't lose against like an Indiana or an Illinois. But that running game, when it's working like that, Khalil Mullins is tough. I love that game. I know we've talked a lot about realignment. If realignment gives us that, USC playing tribute to Troy in Michigan Stadium in a one-score game where it comes down to an old-school Big Ten football play, I'll take more of that over, as Sam was saying, at Ohio State playing Marshall. I have a hard time not taking a nap during that game.
Bill, another defense that looked great this weekend was that Tennessee defense. How high are they going to jump in these rankings this week?
Well, they'll be a top-five team. I think the way I would – size up the national championship picture for you right now. Alabama and Georgia are going to play this weekend. I'm sure we'll hear a little bit about it. Ohio State, very good national championship caliber. Texas might be the best of the four teams right now. I think they're the most complete team, and it clearly doesn't matter who the quarterback is. Tennessee's next. Because they're not only bringing in an offense that runs the ball well around a young quarterback in Nico Iamaleava, their defense can play. They've got a little grit to them. That was a tough road environment. I know Oklahoma has some quarterback issues, but they went in there and showed they can win. And that showed me that when they play Georgia and Alabama, it's not going to be a question of physicality. It's going to be a question of execution in those games.
Sam, I was going to go all in on Travis Hunter here and throw some flowers Colorado's way, but I know you got a real quick question on James Madison, so go ahead real fast.
I mean, the most electric game of the weekend, James Madison rolls into Chapel Hill as 10.5-point dogs and hangs 70 on the Tar Heels. Bill, are they going to win the Sun Belt in their first year without Kurt Cignetti? How did they do this so quickly?
Got 30 seconds, Bill.
Good athletes, good offensive system, and they'll be right in the mix with these other teams like UNLV. But Boise State and Washington State are in the spotlight this weekend. That's going to be a fun game between a good quarterback and Mateer, a good running back and Genty.
I live in Las Vegas, and I guess I'm going to have to go see a UNLV game now. I guess that's where we are. Bill, you coming out here? Come watch a little UNLV football. We'll go and.
I would sit in the front row with you and watch the Rebels. That would be great.
We'll go check out. You know, we'll go one of the casinos over here, go hang out, have a nice steak on me. I like it. Bill Bender does a terrific job with the sporting news. Always appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
Odds and Ends are next. All right. It's about time to put the wraps on this baby. For a Monday. Tomorrow, weekend leftovers, everything we couldn't get to in this extravaganza. Like, we didn't even touch baseball today. We've got, like, literally wild card races to be decided. We will do tons of baseball. Well, not tons, but we'll get to some baseball on the show tomorrow. I feel bad I'm not getting to it today. All right, without any further delay. Time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. You can't have it both ways. And I've said this before and I will continue to say it. You cannot have it both ways when it comes to Caitlin Clark and the coverage that she gets in the media. I've got to see article after article about the greatness of Caitlin Clark, which, by the way, I don't have a problem with. I don't have a problem with celebrating what she's doing for the league. I don't have a problem with celebrating what she means to that Fever franchise. The fact that she's the rookie of the year. The fact that she should have been in the conversation for MVP, which she was, which Asia Wilson obviously won. I don't have a problem with any of that. But when she goes 4-for-17 and is basically a non-factor in a Fever loss on the road in game one against the Connecticut Sun. After all I heard was, hey, the biggest chance for an upset in the opening round of the WNBA playoffs was the Indiana Fever. And they basically, you know, I mean, that game was, I don't care what the final score said or the fact that it was a 10 or 11 point game in the third quarter. You never got the sense that the Fever were going to win that game on Sunday. Now look, maybe things change. Maybe she adjusts for game two. But you can't have a headline on ESPN that talks about everything, you know, Marissa Mabry did or whatever it is, Marina Mabry, you know, going off the bench and having a great game. You cannot have a headline that does not allude to the fact that Caitlin Clark really struggled in that game. Now, they amended it. I blasted them on X yesterday. And all of a sudden this morning, not going to say it's because of me, the headline on ESPN's website seemed to change as it related to that Sun Fever game. Like somebody said, oh yeah, we should probably mention the fact that Caitlin Clark struggled in game one. Sam, you can't have it both ways when it comes to Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. The story of that game was Marina Mabry scoring almost 6 points off the Connecticut bench.
Yeah.
Listen, the Connecticut guard play, and this is something that we didn't really talk about all year, but the Connecticut guard play is one that will shut down Caitlin Clark. And like you saw that in game one, that's why Connecticut has the 1-0 series lead here. Yeah, Jason, do I think that she'll continue to struggle? No, but you're right. The narrative does have to reflect that she did. I agree with you there.
Yeah. And I mean, she was horrendous yesterday, and I saw it affecting some. I saw it affecting some of what she was doing on the defensive end too, and that's even more of a problem. NASCAR, Kyle Larson, shocker, your winner in Bristol. He led. This is insane. It's a 500 lap race. He led for like 460 laps of that race. I mean, it doesn't get any more dominating than what Kyle Larson did at the Bristol night race on Saturday night in Bristol, obviously.
F1-style win for really your boy was. Kyle Larson. Shout out to our boy Tino Patino, who was on Kyle Larson to win the race. Bristol's a fun track. I have been there. The banking is even more insane than it looks on TV. I can honestly report that I got to the top of the bank in the turn and got scared for how steep it was that I had to walk back down. But yeah, always fun to see the night race there. Coming down to it with the NASCAR season. Yep. I'm excited for the finish.
Yep, four racers are out. Brad Keselowski and Martin Truex among the first four out of the postseason. All right, Sam, Page versus the Prince. We both went 2-2 this week. I am the epitome of mediocrity. Let's just say it. I went 2-2 again. I've gone 2-2 every single week for the first 3 weeks of Page versus the Prince. You joined me on the 500 train this week. People could see our picks there and see which ones we got right and which ones we got wrong. Real quick, what do you like tonight?
Tonight, I obviously will start with the Bills game because we got to start with the Bills game. Give me Josh Allen passing plus rushing yards over 267.5. Number feels very, very light there. And Jacksonville's missing a couple of defensive backs. So I like that as a prop. Give me the Bills on the side. In the other game, it's the Commanders and the Bengals. I'm going to take the Commanders now that the line's 7.5. I don't think the Bengals will win it by more than a touchdown. I will say I like both overs tonight. 45.5 for Buffalo, Jacksonville, 46.5 for Washington and Cincinnati.
I got to be honest, I don't have a strong feeling on either of these games. Like, if I'm going to pick them just because we pick them, you know, we pick the primetime games.
I agree with you.
But I don't have a very strong feeling on either of these. If I had one that was the strongest, it'd probably be Buffalo minus the 5.5 tonight. I don't have a lot of faith in Jacksonville right now, and why should you through the first 2 weeks of the season? And if I had another one, it'd probably be the under. If I was going to parlay something tonight, maybe I will throw a shekel here or there. Buffalo minus 5.5, under 45.5. That Commanders-Bengals game, I'd like to say that I think the Bengals are going to win, that you started to see signs of life out of them, but yeah, I wouldn't put my hard-earned money on it. We'll just put it that way.
I'll say
Buffalo minus 5.5, under 45.5. Bengals in the Bengals game, I'll go under 46.5. Real quick.
I don't see it in the market, but if you can find it out there, I like Luke McCaffrey over his receptions as long as it's less than 2.5.
It's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you, Jason Cole. Thank you, Bill Bender. Thank you, Sam Yarnell. We'll see you all back here on Tuesday.